Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Eric Hall Petracco, known to those who knew him as Eric. I interviewed Eric in 2008 before I had this long-form interview program. I knew him to be a quiet, unassuming, gentle family man who grew up in Marble, but I knew little else. But I've learned over the years, when you start an interview at the beginning of a person's life, so much unfolds and is revealed. That was especially true of Eric.
And your family came from Italy?
They came from Italy. My dad's side was, they had a little vineyard there, a little farm more or less. And my mother had her family had an inn, which is still there. I don't know how they ever managed to come to the United States from that little countryside like that. That's unbelievable.
Why did they leave Italy?
They had one of the relatives moved over here moved to Providence, Rhode Island, and he more or less, they followed his course there, and he was a bricklayer and practically built the town of Providence, Rhode Island, with his with his sons and stuff. When my mom and dad, they lived only about 2 miles apart. My mom lived in a little hamlet type thing, and my dad lived on the farm. And I don't know how they ever got together here is unbelievable. I don't know how they wound up in Marble, of all places.
Was your father a stone mason?
No, he was just a farmer. You know, he worked in his dad's brother's vineyard. They had a small vineyard, and I don't know, not very much ground there. I was there a couple times, But the fact that they didn't know each other and then wound up in Marble and got married is unbelievable.
Definitely. So what brought them to Marble? How did they both end up being attracted to Marble?
They had, one of the relatives was over here from in that vicinity, and they... And when my mom came, she went to Providence, Rhode Island first because he had a brother there. But she didn't like it. She wanted to get up in the mountains because they were in a little mountainous area there. And she didn't like Providence, so she got out here because she had a sister out here in Marble. I don't know how she got there, though. But they had a boarding house in Marble. And... some way or another, they met, got married there.
Did your father work in the quarries?
He worked in the mill. He was a sawyer. He sawed the marble with the big machines there. And my mom worked with her sister in the boarding house there. 1914, I think.
1914,
yeah.
Were there lots of Italians in the mine? Yeah, there were.
Yeah, most of the stonecutters were from Italy.
How did they get word of Marble? Do you know?
I don't know that answer to that. I don't know why they wound up in Marble. I just don't know.
Yeah, it must have been word of mouth was pretty good
then. Yeah, probably word of mouth, because there's a lot of Italian stonecutters that were there for and the war, when the war came on, World War One, a lot of them had to go back to Italy because they had to join the army, I guess.
There were quite a few Greeks there too.
Yeah, the Greeks were there, not as many as Italians, though. Italians were more dominant.
Talk about growing up in Marble.
See, my dad and them lived in a small company town just out of Pueblo. That's where I was born, actually. During the Depression, they closed up this quarry there at Lime, Colorado, which is not there anymore. And they moved to Marble because They had a sister. My mom had a sister there that was working there, and they had a house there, so they had a place to move to. So they got, that was about the only place they'd get a job was in Marble during the Depression. So that's how we wound up there. I think I was 9 years old when I, or 10 years old when we moved to Marble.
So they started, they came and met one another in Marble in 1914 or so, and that's where they decided to get married. And then somewhere or another,
they got to this little town out of Pueblo because there was work there in the quarry, lime quarry.
Right.
And they closed that down, then they went to Marble again.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My interview today is with Eric Petracco. Eric was born in Lime, Colorado in 1918 and grew up in Marble, Colorado.
So how many kids were in the family?
There's six kids altogether.
Did you learn English as a young boy, or was it something that you learned later on?
I'll tell you, we must have had some wonderful teachers in this little town of Lime, because the kids, my mom talked to us in Italian all the time. We didn't, when I went to school at first grade, I didn't speak any English. So I can imagine what kind of a teachers we must have had, because they were good.
Did they treat you right?
Oh, yeah. I liked those teachers. They were old country girls, I guess. They were good, though. They had to be. See, my mom always talked to us in Italian, so we had to learn English.
Outside the house.
Outside the house, yeah.
Did your dad speak Italian mostly?
Yeah, he spoke mostly Italian. This little town of Lime, it was kind of divided into foreigners like Austrians and Italians. Then they had the local people that were more like English people, and they had a little bit of discrimination there at that time, because there was a lot of discrimination in those days. I don't know, it was kind of a strange situation there.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the there was, you know, you could feel the difference in, discrimination. It was definitely discrimination, because you had the, what they call the higher class people living on this side of town, and the lower class were working in the different part of town.
Who were the lower class?
Mostly Austrians and Italians, and not too many Irish, a few Irish. The workers were, they had to quarry this lime, you know, and that was a pretty tough job, you know. I can remember the explosions, you know, where they'd dynamite the lime, and they had mules there with carts that hauled it to the crusher, and sometimes the mules would, when the explosion went off, you could hear a terrible noise, and these mules would run away and just tear up the darn carts that they were tearing. It was kind of a strange.
I bet it was dangerous, huh?
Yeah, it was dangerous there.
So did you work in the marble quarry?
Yeah, I spent 1 year in the quarry, and I spent 3.5 years in the mill. Then I was drafted in the Army when I was working in the mill before the war.
So World War II.
Yeah.
Where did you go?
Well, I was down here, which is hard to believe. In Christmas Day, 1940, I was down here getting a physical, pre-induction physical down here at the hospital. The hospital used to be where the bank is now, down at First Bank. Upstairs, it was a hospital. On Christmas Day, of all days, I had to go down there and get a physical. Then I was inducted in the Army the 7th of January, 1941. And that was for 1 year. And before the year was up, I was in Camp Barkley, Texas, just sitting there writing home, telling I'll be home the 13th for leave. And I was listening to the radio, and I heard this thing about Pearl Harbor, you know. So that canceled my leave.
Yeah.
And I was headed for the Panama on the 13th of January. I was on my way to Panama for jungle training. And I didn't get back till, well, it was June 45 when I got back here to Glenwood. I got discharged from the service.
So from January of what year?
From January the 7th to June 45, four and a half years later.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Eric Petracco. Eric has just been drafted into the Army. It's 1941. He's sitting in his barracks when he learns that Pearl Harbor has been bombed. And for the next 4.5 years, he wouldn't be able to return home.
So you didn't see home or?
No, I was out there in the Pacific all that time. I was in the combat team. I spent 2.5 years in the South Pacific, Philippine Islands.
So were you in? You were on the ground. You were in the jungles.
I was in the jungle. Yeah, I hadn't seen a white woman for two years, and then I got. They took a few of us that had been there the longest and put us on a boat and headed for Sydney. I spent about 6 weeks R&R in Sydney, and that was like going out of hell into heaven, I tell you. I couldn't believe that place. Oh, that was... I finally got home. When we first went over to Australia, that's where we landed. And, of course, we had all these islands between Australia and Japan, and we figured, well, that was just a matter of we were going to get killed eventually because there was no way to get all those islands between us and Japan. But then they come out with a point system, and that gave us a little bit of hope, you know. And I had quite a few points. In fact, I got out before the war was over. I was sitting here when they dropped the big bomb on them. And I had enough points, but I couldn't see how we could survive all that time without point system. Because our outfit was scheduled, I saw the orders, they were scheduled to hit southern Japan with this combat team, and it was supposed to be a suicide mission.
So you knew you weren't coming home.
I figured I'd never get back. I thought eventually I would get killed over there, because I was in on 3 or 4 invasions, and there was just no way that, without the point system, there was no way to get out of that thing alive. But I guess I was pretty lucky.
So do you know they talk a lot about post-traumatic stress syndrome these days.
Oh, yeah, well...
You've seen a lot, I would imagine.
I've had that people ask me about that before, and I really think the reason we didn't have that much is over there, we were trained so heavy. We had a lot of training. I think I walked clear across Texas a couple times with doing maneuvers, and we were tough, really. I mean, this outfit we were in was really, really a tough outfit. It's combat bushmasters. They call us the bushmasters, from the bushmaster snake in Panama.
So did you see any of those bushmaster snakes when you were there?
You know, I never saw a snake there. I've seen monkeys and parrots and birds, all kinds of stuff. I never did see a snake. And this was a deadly snake, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Eric Petracco. It's 1941, and Eric is part of the Bushmasters, an elite combat team, preparing to fight their way to Japan through the South Pacific Islands. Eric is about to describe his experiences in combat and war. Please be advised that some listeners may find this disturbing.
So did you have to fight the Japanese?
Yeah, I've got Japanese as close to me as this wall over here. I don't know. The outfit I was in was, there would be no prisoners. We didn't have anybody taking prisoners. We were there to die or fight. That was the thing. And there was I think our outfit was mostly about 50% Mexican heritage, and they were good soldiers. And we had a few Indians that used some of those guys in the scouting system, because the Japanese couldn't break their code, you know. They had this Indian language, and they used that a lot. So they were one of MacArthur's favorite. In fact, our outfit was one of MacArthur's favorite regiments. It's a pretty good outfit.
What was the regiment?
158th Regimental Combat Team, called the Bushmasters. I got a whole history about the Dish Bushmasters. My daughter got on the computer and she gave us the whole history of the 158th. It was really good.
Was it hard to readjust to normal life when you came back after living in the jungle and fighting hand to hand?
When I got back, I was so glad to be back. I just didn't think about it. Drink a lot. I was out in the bars all for a couple of years drinking beer. I didn't drink heavy. I just drank beer, and I was kind of wild for a while. It took me a couple of years to get settled down.
So, when you were in the field in the bush, how close did you come to dying?
Oh God, I don't know how many times. I've had. I was in. Well, to start with, when we first went to Panama, Germans were sinking those boats right and left, you know. And then we went to Australia, and I was in the bombing attacks and knee mortar attacks.
What are knee mortar attacks?
Yeah, the Japs were good with those knee mortars, you know. They were real good with that. I got into a couple of those, and I had an artillery shell land about 20 yards from me, and it just shook the ground, but it didn't go off. It was just a dud.
Or you wouldn't be here.
I wouldn't be here. But the closest call I came, I was delivering ammunition to the front lines, and I was stopped by a coconut tree. We were in a coconut grove. And a bullet hit right next to my helmet. Just hit the tree right there and hit me. Of course, I've moved like I got out of there in a hurry. But that's the closest I ever come getting killed. Of course, I was in three or four landings, initial landings. But they weren't like the ones in Italy there that's the story I would like to point out, is that one in Italy. I was in the 45th Division, and they broke up I was in the 157th Infantry, and they broke up the division out of a square and made it into a triangle, and they shipped to some of us lower ranks to this 158th Combat Team.
Was this before the Philippines?
Yeah. And this outfit that I was in the 45th Division, they went into Anzio and they got wiped out. My company got wiped out. So see, that's one I got out of that one by luck, see? And they shipped me to this 158th, which was a combat team for to went to the Pacific.
So what kept you going when in the middle of all that hell?
I don't know. Me and a fellow from Grand Junction, we went through the whole thing together and came back together, and we talked about that, and we said, well, it's just hard. You just can't describe it because you're just like an animal after a while, you know. And I think one of the most terrible experiences I had, I think, was in New Guinea. And our outfit was supposed to take this place called Sarmi. So we had a battalion in there, and we didn't know who the enemy was at the time, but it turned out to be a division of Japanese Marines. And here, this regiment, we were trying to whip a division of Marines, and of course we were getting our butt kicked there pretty bad.
So for those that don't know, what describe the difference between a regiment and a division?
Oh, a regiment is three battalions, actually. And
how many people is that?
Well, they run about a thousand people for a battalion.
Uh-huh.
Then the division is a couple of regiments. You know, that's three battalions to a regiment. So we were supposed to go relieve this first battalion that was fighting the division, and there was a river between us and the Marines, Japanese Marines, and here we were scheduled to go in and relieve the first battalion. So here we sit there waiting to go into combat, see, and while we're waiting there, here comes the litters of our people. You know, they were coming out across over there with litters, and we were waiting, and they had these guys stacked up like cordwood over here, dead bodies, you know, our American bodies, you know, and we were supposed to go in there, and we did go in there. And, of course, we didn't do very good. We lost a lot of men there. But it turned out that our colonel, he was with the unit from the start, and he retreated across the river back to, because he realized that we were getting clobbered. And they actually relieved him of his duties because he retreated. But I found out later, read stuff about it, that he was reinstated when they found out that we were fighting a overwhelming enemy there. But that was probably my worst moment, I think, of the whole war.
So you're standing there waiting to cross, and
yeah,
all the bodies are...
Yeah, and the bodies are coming out. And the thing you see about military combat is a person's eyes. They look so haunted when they come out of there. They just and you know, you're actually, you can't eat, you know, when you're in combat. You just can't eat because your stomach is tore up so bad, and everybody has that haunted look. They just like almost like an animal. It's very hard to describe.
The heart of darkness, though.
Yeah. Oh God, it was bad. That's why people don't talk about it, I think. You just can't explain it, I guess. That's why they don't talk about it.
So how do you
you get over it, I guess. When I got back here, I just started my life all over again. I was doing a little messing around every night. I'd go out and drink beer, but eventually I got over that.
That was Eric Petracco. One of the people who helped Eric get over the trauma of war was his wife, Pauline Steele. Eric and Pauline were married in 1949. Eric re-enlisted in the Army, and for the next 22 years, they traveled the world from Army post to Army post and had 6 children along the way. They were divorced in 1972, and Eric eventually married Ruth Dwyer, and they spent the next 34 years together. Ruth died in 2006, and Eric died in 2009, a year after this interview was recorded. He was 90 years old. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on immigrant stories, go to immigrantstories.net. Thanks for listening.